raising the speed limit on the information superhighway. TalkZone.com. Now more of the Wild About Pets radio show on TalkZone.com. Once again, here's Susan Frank.
Welcome back to the show. Today I'm talking about my visit to the Great American Pet Expo that took place on November 14th and 15th at Navy Pier in Chicago, Illinois. They had all sorts of performers and speakers and exhibitors and vendors. And so, you know, I'm taking you through some of the interviews of the 2 days I was there. I also have some great photographs on my website, wildaboutpets.net. You can get to those very easily by clicking the purple Look While You Listen button that you see on the TalkZone.com page. We're right now at number 15, and one of the famous local personalities that was speaking at the show was Steve Dale, who has a long-running radio show called Steve Dale's Pet World. He is heard on WLS Radio, and he came by my booth with a good friend of his who is also a well-known Chicago personality. I asked Steve to introduce his friend.
This is none other than Paul Lisnick, who you see on WGN-TV, on Comcast. In fact, he is on television so often, you have no choice but to see this guy on TV. I got him last week on my toaster oven. He's everywhere.
Did he come through
the way? Yes, he's everywhere. He's talking. He talks about entertainment. He talks about politics. But what I know about Paul, because I've known him so long, is that he's a huge pet lover.
Paul, where is it in the world of pets and politics that it can occur that they can collide?
My view of the world is everything, whether it should or should not be political, becomes political. Because every time you want to add a right for any kind of pet or animal, you're back in front of the city council. Every time you want to stop something tragic, like the slaughter of horses, you're out at the Illinois legislature. There's no issue that pet owners and pet lovers care about that doesn't then trigger and involve government at some level to make a decision. And once you involve government at some level to make a decision, then politics are in play, then lobbyists are in play, because there are people always on all sides of the issue. The comforting part for me is that at least I know Steve Dale's always on the right side. And I'm not kidding about that, because if I'm not sure about an issue, Steve and I will talk about it to get a good sense, for me to get a good sense, on what the people's view on it probably ought to be, and not some politico who might be getting pressured by a lobbyist for donations and contributions.
You know, speaking of legislation, Paul, one of the things I want to ask you about is regarding the breed legislation that we're seeing happening. I did a show about the campaign that the Best Friends Animal Society is doing to try and save America's dogs, the pit bulls. And I know there's a lot of legislation that's trying to ban the pit bulls. So perhaps that's something that you might know something about that we can also touch on.
Well, there's no question. And one of the things Steve has taught me over the years is that, you know, it's not about the breed. It's about the owner.
Right.
And it's about how the owner raises the dog and treats the dog. And I, you know, I mean, there may be an anomaly to everything. There's anomaly in people, right? People who go wrong and kill people and do other things. So it's not that you can't have a bad example of something. But the reality of it is, almost any problem people have with pets, it's not about the pet, it's about the way that pet or animal has been treated.
I know, but unfortunately it's coming out in the banning of the animals. Steve, do you have experience with people calling in or asking you questions about this very issue with their pit bulls?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I've testified not only for the city of Chicago, but all over the country at this point, about breed-specific bans is what we're talking about. Usually pit bull, I should rephrase that. Always pit bulls are at the top of the list. And then maybe Rottweilers, and depending on the community. You know where the problem is now? Here's the good news. We can thank Michael Vick. We could send him, people who do what I do could send him a thank you note. Because I think because of Michael Vick, people are beginning to understand that, gee whiz, the dogs are only a victim here also. It's not the dog's fault. It's idiots who fight these dogs. They are the problem. It's a social problem more than it is a dog issue. You know where the big breed-specific problem is now? Because slowly, our public officials are beginning to understand that breed bans aren't going to solve these social problems. We need to solve them in other ways. I don't know what the answers are for those, but we do need to solve those in other ways. What is happening, however, are insurance companies that are saying, aha, you name the breed. I am sure that somewhere in America, there's an insurance company that says, if you have a miniature schnauzer, your home insurance has to be more money. And I know there's an example of an insurance carrier that says for homeowners insurance, if you have, I hope you're sitting down for this, a chihuahua, you need to pay more money or we won't insure you. And most certainly, dogs like a pit bulls, if you can even tell me what a pit bull is,
right,
because they can be hard to identify.
Yes.
But a dog such as a pit bull, a Doberman, an Akita, a Chow Chow, they're like perennially on these lists. But those lists are growing and the lists are arbitrary. And what's really interesting is, for an example, and it's true, you can go to Kentucky. And in Kentucky, because it's state by state, insurance laws are state to state. In Kentucky, a certain insurance company says you cannot have an Akita. You cross over the border into Tennessee, Akitas are just fine. It's the same dog. That doesn't make any sense. So my question to Paul is this. There are now a couple, and I do mean a couple, a handful, less, smaller, very few, a very small pawful of legislators. There's a guy in Washington, the state of, and one right here in Illinois, who you know, the guy in Illinois, who's working on legislation or kind of sort of on and off again, where the idea would be to prevent insurance companies from being able to arbitrarily, because that's how they do it pretty much, mandate which breeds could be banned or not banned, or which breeds you'd have to pay more for to have insurance coverage. Could it be illegal for insurance companies to do that? And by the way, the reason why they're having difficulty and the reason why there are only so few of them, Paul probably condenses this, is lobbyists. And the insurance lobby is a pretty strong lobby.
Well, he's right. Insurance lobbies are very strong lobbies. And as far as could these kind of provisions be illegal, I mean, part of the problem is private insurance companies and in terms of what standards are put on them. And usually when it comes to animals and pets, you know, we don't have the kind of standards that we talk about, say, with, and I'm switching gears, but preconditions in a human being. The problem is things are getting better, but we don't view animals or pets, companion animals, the same way or with the same rights as we do humans. And some would say, well, we shouldn't. But the bottom line, an earlier comment on the dog fighting thing, you know, in my world, I talk a lot about the death penalty and, you know, and political issues. And one of the things we know about the death penalty is not a deterrent if people are going to murder somebody. But I think when you talk about something like dog fighting, there are, I think, stiffer penalties involving that or any kind of animal abuse. That, I think, would be a deterrent and does make a difference. Because while some people don't care, the reality of it is, these days, even if you're involving dog fighting, you're Michael Vick finally going to jail. Up until recently, you didn't go to jail. You got a slap on the hand. Stiffer penalties to try and stop that kind of activity may be the one place where it makes a difference.
Couldn't it drive the whole activity further underground? Because I know a lot of times it is very hidden, and it's hard to know, well, who could they find, because it is such a subculture.
Oh, there's no question, and it is a subculture. Puppy mills are a subculture. I mean, all these things are underground, so there's no question, whatever law, I mean, look, ban abortions and people will, that will go underground. I mean, whatever it is that you want to ban or put something on will send other people underground to do what they're going to do. You can't stop it. But what you can do is have the vigilantes out there, the people who track that stuff down. We're lucky enough in Illinois to have a cop, I know, who's after the dog fighters and all of that. You need the people who are going to be out there and do what they can to find them.
Well, one cop who's out there is our top cop, Cook County Sheriff Tom Dart, does a very good job at this, and he takes it seriously because he knows wherever there is dog fighting, there's going to be other crimes. He also knows that the kids are impacted in such a way where they're going to grow up probably committing crimes,
right,
if they're exposed to dog fighting at such a young age. One thing that I definitely wanted to talk about, and that is, on a lighter note, how can you tell whether our dogs are Democrat or Republican?
Don't you love that segue?
Oh, I knew he was going to go there.
Okay, so let's hear it. How can one tell?
You can't.
And I'm being tongue-in-cheek.
No, you really seriously can tell. If the dog is wagging his tail to the left.
Oh.
No.
I don't think that worked. I thought you were going to have a better line than that. I thought for sure you were going to say if he bites, he's a Republican. Something like that.
The difference is he can afford better riders than me. So.
We have Lee Harrison from Illinois Vesta Dog. Lee, what do you think about that little attitude? You know dogs very well. And the idea that depending upon which way its tail wagged, its political inclination, what would be your comment to that?
All police officers, including four-legged ones, need to stay neutral on the issue of politics.
Ah, gentlemen.
She's a politician herself. She's on the way out of it.
She's very tactful.
Politics into this discussion.
That was Lee Harrison of Illinois Vesta Dog. You can hear an earlier interview I had with her about this great not-for-profit organization that raises money to purchase and then donates bullet and knife-proof vests for police dogs. Check out the November 13th episode. Well, you could definitely hear the announcers of some of the entertainment the show is going on in the background, couldn't you? Great for the visitors and for the whole show, but very difficult for doing some of the interviews. It was time now to go see some cats. The International Cat Association was here at the Great American Pet Expo, and they were doing something different than having a traditional professionally judged cat show. So after seeing some gorgeous and really cute cats, I sat down with Jamie Christian, who is the regional director for the Great Lakes area of the International Cat Association, and I first asked him, what is the mission of the association?
The International Cat Association is the world's largest genetic registering body of felines. But in addition to that, we also welcome household pets, and we issue certificates and treat them the same as pedigree cats in cat shows. So pedigree cats and household pets both compete for regional and international awards, which makes us a little different.
Now, I remember when you and I first initially spoke, you were telling me about that. Does that mean that the average cat owner can bring a cat to one of your shows? And what would then the cat be able to do?
Absolutely, they're welcome to. I need to cover two things. First thing is that with any cat at a Tika cat show, you're allowed to show your cat one time without the cat being registered. It's kind of a try before you buy policy. Then if you turn around liking the show, having a good time, which we hope you do, then you can send in a registration form, be it for a pedigree cat, or you can register your household pet. Then you get a certificate back, and each cat has its own individual registration number, and then you use that number.
Now, obviously, Jamie, a lot of people are very familiar with the dog shows, and we see them on television, and even people have an idea of what might constitute winning various titles and championships for dogs. But I think we don't know what would constitute, you know, those titles for cats. What are they judged on?
Right. It's a little bit different than dog shows. The cats aren't required to run around or do tricks, although that would be kind of fun. But the cat, each breed of cat has a written standard based on 100 points, and the judges have tested on these standards and handled cats through the training process. And what they do is they compare each pedigreed cat in their ring to a written breed standard, and how well that cat meets its own breed standard. Then they take all of the pedigreed cats in each class, and they select which ones meet their standards the best. So cats really aren't competing against each other. They're competing against their own breed standard. And the judges rank their top tens based on how each of those cats meet their own breed standard. With household pets, the breed standard, which there is a breed standard for household pets, it is basically the cats have to be healthy, clean, and friendly. And beyond that, it's kind of judge's choice.
Do you have cats yourself?
Of course I do. I am very allergic to cats, but I have cats myself.
Oh, so am I. But yes, I had a cat for 19 years. So tell me about your cats.
So I personally have Bombays and Burmese and Cornish Rex and a lot of rescues because I originally started fostering cats. But of course, there were those special cats that I'm still fostering after 8 or 10 years.
Oh, yeah. Right. Yes, of course. They're yours permanently now.
And although I have... In the past, I have bred Bengals and Havanas and most recently Sphinx. Earlier this year, I have personally quit breeding just to focus on just loving my cats and taking them to cat shows and just having a good time.
I noticed today the cats that you have here aren't, you know, traditionally showing. They're here for other reasons, which was kind of fun. What are you doing here at the Great American Pet Expo here at Navy Pier with these cats?
We're actually just having a fun time here. We have one judging ring set up. Our members were allowed to actually come to this event at no charge. So what we're doing is we're giving out fun rosettes for, like, best eye color, most playful, toy killer, tallest cat, longest tail, best spots. And the crowd really likes that because they can vote by their applause. So it's really been fun. We've had quite a crowd over there when we've given out those awards.
And to me, it seems, Jamie, that explains or typifies what you were saying, that you're trying to bring together the average cat owner who loves their cat and thinks they have the best cat in the world, the most beautiful, with, you know, the cats that show.
Absolutely.
And that there's a way to appreciate all aspects of cats, that they don't have to be these, you know, award-winning champion cats, as you were mentioning.
Oh, absolutely. Every cat is just as valuable as the next cat, because let's face it, the cats don't care if they're pedigreed or not.
Well, okay, one last thing that brings me to, when I've been at dog shows, I notice when the dogs are going to be competing, they know they're on, and they behave different. You know, they kind of go into their professional mode. Have you ever noticed that if a cat is being observed, okay, for those people who can't see this, Jamie is, yes, he is very amused by what I just asked. So, okay, but I've got to finish it. Do the cats know something or behave differently?
Oh, absolutely. Cats start showing at 4 months old. They're allowed to be shown at 4 months old in our association. And, you know, there are those cats that they go to a lot of shows as kittens, and by the time they're adults, they are old pros. They know that this is what I do in a ring. They know that judges keep toys beside the table, so when their feet hit the judging table, they start looking for the toys. So you can always tell the cats that have really been around a while, because they know what to do.
I was cracking up in that last part of the interview because I was sure by the way Jamie was reacting to what I was asking and the face that he was making that he was going to say, "What are you nuts? We are talking about cats. They don't care. They just do whatever they want." But then he surprised me when he said they actually are aware they are showing. How about you? Does that surprise you? It was time to walk around again. Ooh, I saw some really pretty golden retrievers sitting at a booth called As Good as Gold. And this was a golden retriever rescue organization. Now, I was thinking to myself, why would goldens need a rescue organization? They are so popular and sweet-natured. I stopped to talk to Cindy and Steve Dettinger, who for the last 6.5 years have devoted themselves to working with the organization. They also have a very regal-looking golden that they saved themselves. His name is Captain Morgan, and you can see his photo, which is number 24. And Captain Morgan was sitting with Cindy and Steve and I while we were doing the interview, and also that picture is number 25. And if you want to see these photographs, just click that purple Look While You Listen button, and that'll take you right to the photographs.
A lot of it is life-changing circumstances. People get divorced, moved, can't take the dog. There are people that go into assisted living and they don't have the family that can care for the dog. So we take it in and rehome it. But the most common reason is that cute fluff ball of a puppy grew up to be 85 pounds of high energy between cheerleading and soccer practice. The family doesn't have time for the dog, let alone time to do the obedience training and give it the exercise it needs.
Well, now, this would be kind of typical of, I suppose, a lot of dogs and people surprised that the cute little puppy grows up to be an adult. But would you say that you see more golden retrievers than some of the other breeds for any particular reason, Steve?
Probably because they're so popular. Every time you see a movie or a commercial on TV, the happy family has a golden retriever, and people think that they're just going to be well-trained lap dogs. They're really field dogs. They need a lot of energy and a lot of exercise, and people fail to realize that when they buy a dog.
Right, and of course we know that it's so critical to match the dog with the lifestyle or the people that the dogs are coming to the family. Now, Cindy, you mentioned something that it seems like there's a time of year that you see more of the goldens being given up.
We'll start rescuing Christmas presents right around February and March. People think it's a great idea to go get a dog for the kids for Christmas, not realizing everything involved with actually raising an animal, and especially a puppy and everything we just discussed. And so they'll call us to say, "Help, we can't handle this."
How do you deal with that then? Do you try and educate people not to buy dogs for presents?
Yeah, and especially, you know, don't shop, adopt. To go support your local rescue groups, your shelters, you know, do not go to the pet store because that only supports the puppy mills. Yeah. And they are not reputable breeders.
Well, you know, the holidays are still upon us and Christmas is coming. And if you look at picture number 26, which is a group of adorable little golden retriever puppies, or if you think about some of the movies that have been out recently or commercials that you see, then you'll know that golden retrievers are used very heavily in the media. And of course, they are adorable. But I think it's very important that we think long and hard before we surprise our children or someone else with a puppy. You know, we get so caught up in the spirit of giving, and who wouldn't be charmed by an adorable puppy? And giving someone a dog with all the benefits we know it will provide is almost a natural thing to want to do during the holidays. But we mustn't lose sight of the seriousness involved in both the responsibility of having a dog and the ability and willingness of the person you might want to gift to actually provide what the dog needs. As I walked along the aisles, I came upon another golden whose name was Tangent, and this one was relaxing and looking very noble. It was wearing what looked like a very nicely shaped necklace with a bright light. What was this? I asked Jackie Simone, inventor of this product and president of the company that makes them. She told me it's a pup light. I asked her how she came to create this thing.
Well, it was kind of strange. I was walking my Tangent at night, and I was carrying the leash, a poop bag, mace, and a flashlight. It was really cumbersome, but I really needed the flashlight because it was super dark there. I looked down at Tangent, who wasn't carrying a thing, and said, "Tangent, you could carry the light." And a minute later I said, "Not such a strange idea. If I could find one flat and small, he could carry the light." And that was the start of Pup Light.
And how long ago was that, Jackie?
5 years.
All right, so 5 years ago you developed this product. Now, did you have to manufacture it yourself? And had you ever done anything like this?
Yes. I had no idea how to turn an idea into a product. But I had to learn quick because LEDs were just becoming available, and I had a window of opportunity to move through so that I could be first to market with the product. So I did my patent and my trademark, and then I hired an engineering firm, and then I hired a marketing firm, and then I found a manufacturing company, and we put it all together, and 7 months later, we had our pup lights.
Well, tell us more about the pup lights.
It's a super bright. We made it about as bright as you could. It's visible up to a mile away so that your dog won't get hit by a car. And getting hit by a car is the most likely reason a dog dies before the age of 2.
I didn't know that.
Yep. And it also makes your dog easy to find if he happens to run out of the yard. It also, though, this what makes us really unique is this product's like a light bulb, so it lights up 10, 20 feet in front of you when you're walking your dog. And before Pup Light, I walked Tangier for 3 months before Pup Light. He picked up dead animals, tin cans, chased after skunks. Cars were running us off the road. I slipped on ice, stepped in holes, and tripped over things. Since Pup Light, we have had no mishaps. And cars see us, and you're not running off the road anymore.
Okay, now obviously I have the link to your website on my page here. Can people order it directly online from you guys?
There are a number of websites that sell the product. We sell it at puplight.com. And there's also a website called puplights.com that actually shows you a video.
Oh, that'll be fun, and hopefully
yes.
We'll have that loaded here.
Yes.
So now you said there are some other applications that you have discovered people who buy the pup lights have been using. They don't only use them on their dogs.
Right. Yeah, it's like a little light bulb that stands up. So people have a power outage, and they used the pup light instead of a flashlight. And so we made a version for people called neck light. That goes around your neck. It has a safety release. It angles up or down. You can place the light closer in, further out. It's great for reading. And a lot of people walk with both a pup light on their dog and a neck light on them, and you really get a lot of light.
You know, Jackie, as I am listening to you, I'm wondering, have you had parents say they put these lights on their children?
Yes, we do. We've had the neck light has so many different uses. We've had people put them on their children. They're great for going out on Halloween. We've had nurses use them in a hospital so they don't have to turn the lights on when they enter the room and wake up the patients. And the patient uses them so they don't have to wake up their partner when they go to the bathroom. And we have police officers that are using them, and people are using them for electrical repair. Taxi drivers love them. Campers love them. It's got so many uses.
Oh, and it's an attractive design, too. You know,
It's 2.5 ounces, so it's small and lightweight. You don't even feel you're wearing it, yet it has enough bulk that it stands up solid. So it's just so useful.
Now, Jackie, is there anything else like this on the market? I mean, this is the first time I had seen this product.
Well, there's a lot of headlights, but there's really nothing like a neck light that you could wear. It comes with a strap and a cord, so you can wear it on your head as a headlight or around your neck, or it stands up. And as far as we know, there's nothing like that on the market.
Well, it's a wonderful invention. Now, maybe you said this, but tell me, how long will they last? Or is there a battery running it?
It takes 3 AAA batteries.
Okay.
And they will go up to 150 hours, although it gets dimmer until you finally change the batteries. And we change the batteries around 30 or 40 hours. And it will even run on rechargeable, so it's economically friendly and inexpensive to offer.
I love stories like these. Someone like Jackie who gets an idea to solve a practical problem they have, does something they've never done before, like learning how to get a product made, and in doing so, reinvents their life. For holiday shopping, the pup lights are in many brick-and-mortar stores. Some of the small pet boutiques, as well as the larger chains, carry them. We are going to take a break now, so stay tuned. We'll be back with more.